does. No. I know what it says on this end.
That's probably on your end then. Like, my connection is fine. I can see everything.
Oh, I knew it would be my fault. Typical woman. Bob Beach says he's not coming. It's too early. He's still eating. Hello, welcome to the big show. Less Bob Beach. 7 p.m. still eating. You can't go to bed on a stomach full of food, but don't be silly. Joining me to discuss all of the big tech stories that have gone in the week, we've got a fantastic panel to the big show. Yes, Righty Boy's supposed to be here as well, but I reckon he thinks it's 8 o'clock, not 7. So we expect him to dial in a bit later. But the people that are here, first of all, me brother from another mother, Chris Ashley. How you doing, man? I missed you. I ain't seen you in forever, bud.
Oh, I've been crying, and I said, you know what? I'm going to make it happen this week. No way I'm missing this. I'm here, my brother.
Yeah. Good man. Great to see you, buddy. What's been happening in your life? Apart from
I've been getting into a lot of building and remodeling and trying to, you know, be more handy and learn new stuff. You know, everybody's still dealing with the same craziness. So, you know, trying to just try my hand at new stuff, you know, still barbecuing like crazy. I'm about to put 4 salmons on the smoker tomorrow morning. So that's not changing. But making like little furniture, made my daughter a desk and a file cabinet, and you know, it's kind of fun, kind of get into some new stuff.
Yeah, no, I've been making stuff down at the office, but that's because I'm poor. next to him, Patrice, how you doing, mate?
Hey, yeah, doing good. Just woke up from a nap and then like had set everything up in like 10 minutes, so I haven't even found a story for today. I'll have to still do that.
Well, you're second on the list. Well, you're last on the list because it's first come, first serve in the chat room, so don't worry about it. You can get there.
Okay, perfect.
In line two, Atlee, still in an unfinished symphony of a room. How much further you got to go, mate?
Well, like I said, I'm still sort of stuck. I'm waiting for all the electrical to get approved, and then once it gets approved, we can close up the walls and move on.
We deal with that pretty quick. How long before they come around?
Still don't even have a date. Yeah, everybody's backlogged here. There's a lot of development going on in the area. A lot of big companies doing some big things. So,
yeah,
mostly to do with the new weed and pot production that's being done in the province.
Oh, nice. So lots of trailing cables across the floor.
No cables at all. Actually, on the floor. The floor is raised up. All the cables are underneath the floor. Even have power that for the desk comes up out of the floor.
Muller's just suggesting you got too many in body bags to hide at the moment.
I have lots of forest behind me. And there's an ocean right next to me.
Yeah, take it out. Well, Dexter style would have been to take it out in the ocean and sink it. Yeah,
totally. Exactly.
Yeah, totally. And last but by no means least, Mr. Dabs, how are you with new front door and cat flap?
It's the same old cat, but new front door with a cat flap in it.
Excellent. I wasn't sure there for a second.
On a training course.
Oh.
So it's a day-long training course about doing crowdfunding.
Oh, okay.
So now I know a day's worth of training about crowdfunding.
And is it going to change your life?
Well, we'll see. It's one of those courses that's funded by the Federation of Entertainment Unions in Britain.
Okay.
Of which NUJ, funnily enough, is part. But whenever I go on one of their training courses, everyone else is an actor.
Of course.
And they all wear kind of funny hats and stuff, you know, on a Zoom course, you know. So, yeah. So, there you go.
Muller says the sound's gone, but the sound's definitely on here. So, it must be your end, mate.
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you. Well, that's because we're all in the desk. You know, the desk is different from the output to the thing. But
oh, that's true.
I've got wobble on the wobble meter on the desk on the Skype thing, so the Zoom thing, the Wirecast thing. Jeez,
is that a professional term? The wobble meter.
We're waiting on writing.
So we got two people here that are tech strong that can't figure out watches, and you can't keep your names of all the technologies you're using straight.
Oh, mate, it's late on a Thursday, and the problem I had today was I woke up this morning really early to come down here and do a Zoom meeting for a networking group. Did that, had a chat with a guy here. I was gone from here at 9 o'clock. I made myself a bit of breakfast when I got home, and I thought, what shall I do now? So I made the mistake of putting the TV on and watching started watching Midway, the film. And I never got to the end of it. I was on the sofa. I got up early. And then I woke up and I watched How the Universe Works, which is great. I really enjoyed that. They did about light travel and gravity wells. Oh, I love it. I'm the crap at it, and I'm the first to admit I'm a complete luddite when it comes to physics, but I do like watching it, even though I don't understand it. This week in tech, who's got a story that they think is of significant enough nature, and the fastest fingers, this thing is Atlee. Talk us through it. Oh boy.
So it looks like ARM is up for sale, and NVIDIA is looking at purchasing it, and Apple's already said that they're not really that interested. But I'm kind of surprised that Apple wouldn't be interested, because it sort of patents and things like that are in their wheelhouse, and having, you know, a piece of every single mobile device on the planet probably. I'm surprised that they don't want that in their bottom line.
When you go back to the firms that have got their deep roots back in the 90s and 80s, you know, the BlackBerrys, et cetera, they are patent rich, are they not?
Yeah, definitely. And ARM is definitely one of them.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that Apple's not grabbing it up, because, I mean, they do okay with iPhone, but they're still losing out heavily to Android. And to think that they wouldn't want to go in and just grab a piece of that particular pie every single front, every single device it's put on, I'm surprised they didn't want to.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the reasoning probably is that they didn't want to deal with all the like patenting and all of that. I mean, that would mean that Apple would have to like provide.
So Apple doesn't want to deal with too many patents. This is a company that patented a rounded rectangle.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't want to provide patents to others, though. Patenting for themselves, that's great. Like, let's do that. But, like, they would have to provide the technology to other companies. And
well, there's got to be a lot of patents. There's got to be a lot of patents in ARM that are coming to an end as well as. Because your patent's only 20 years, isn't it?
But it depends on how the changes and the updates and the modifications to ARM, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Those things have been happening all along. So while the first generation of patents based on the earlier iterations of ARM technology, there have been several iterations that have probably been patented all the way through. And so as that technology continues to evolve, they're continuing to, you know, line up more patents on it. I'm sure that there's still a fairly patent-rich environment there. And they wouldn't be providing the technology. They're providing the license. Basically, it's almost like a license to print money. You're just basically saying you want to use ARM technology and the ARM architecture, then you have to pay us XP. Right? Yeah, I mean, ARM doesn't make any chips. They don't make anything. They just have all these technologies. They have they develop the technologies in the architecture.
Yeah, but I said like it's. Yeah, sure, you're right. It is a license to print money, but it said it's still...
Well, you've got to gather it, though, haven't you? That's the trouble. It's not just... Yeah. There's got to be a harvesting process that is bound to have a cost-effective to it.
And you've got to also watch for people that are infringing on the patent. And, I mean, it's not without cost. I mean...
If you don't defend it, you lose it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There was... Yeah, but the thing is, I like I said, I'm just surprised that in Apple's market position and where they are right now, I'm surprised they don't have any interest in it. Mm.
So if they put a figure on it.
Well, see, the other thing is, too, they just steal the best bits out of the ARM architecture and use it for their own chip development, their own architecture development for what they're working on, and not have to pay any fees for it or not get into anything because they own the architecture outright. So I'm surprised that there's no thought in that either.
It's probably not that expensive, and they're like, eh.
As Alistair said, is there a price on this then? It's all very well.
Being $32 billion. That's what they bought it.
They're looking at selling it for about $40 billion.
Mm. That seems steep.
Yeah. That well, it's still the relevant technology though, right? Because even Apple. That they're transitioning everything to ARM. Their own version of it, but they're transitioning. Yeah. And even Microsoft has been working on shrinking Windows down to run on ARM as well. So it's still relevant for sure.
I'm just, like I said, I'm just surprised that Apple wouldn't go in and try and grab this up, because it gives them a dominant position on architecture that, like you said, they use. and everybody else. I mean, it would be their one time so far to hold something that everybody else wants.
And yeah, but the article pointed out that one key piece, right, is that, that, you know, the regulatory nightmare. And, you know, I have trouble believing that any of these companies have trouble getting through regulatory compliance because they just pretty much own all the politicians. But it'd probably still be a challenge for them.
Yeah, but it'd be a challenge on which person they're paying off. It wouldn't really be a challenge.
I think the best safeguard that America has got, though, Chris, is the EU. Because if Apple, you know, or Microsoft or any of the big tech firms, Facebook and so on, really has got politicians in the pocket, they've got American politicians. So when they bring it over to the UK and the EU, which is completely devoid of any sense of wonder about America, it will be hammered to the nth degree.
Well, I you know what? I actually love that that's the case, right? Because even with the GDPR, how that that affects every company that I talk to on a regular basis. They're all like, how can you help me with GDPR? You know, so that is a great point, and that's something that I actually love is the case, because it we need it, because these cats over here just let anything go.
Even though it's completely unenforceable in the U.S.,
Yeah, but at least America's only one market. I mean, America's, what, 4% of the world's population? And as these markets are expanding and growing, and as more parts of the world start using more and more technology, America's share and impact on it, their impact still is high, but the regulatory impact of challenges like the EU and other places in the world is definitely important. I mean, because America's basically bought and paid for at this point.
True.
It's interesting. The bigger question is, you know, are they hurting that badly? You know, because it's owned by SoftBank, and this is probably one of their most prized possessions, or at least according to them. So, are they hurting that badly through this COVID problem that they're going to sell their top IP?
Have they made anything back on their original investment of $32 billion as well? Because I think that seems fairly steep. They're not.
ARM has gotten better and more powerful, so it must be more, I would assume.
Well, I would imagine the architecture itself appears on more chipsets and on more devices now than ever before. It's actually on more devices and more chipsets than Intel's. So I would imagine that they're making. They've got to be making at least something, and I would be surprised if they haven't. It could have been that, like, we've made most of our investment back. Let's now sell it and get what we paid for it plus some more.
That's my question. Do you really think
use it to do other things?
No, but that's my question. Do you really think they've made their investment back at $32 billion or not?
Doesn't sound like 4 years.
So probably I can't not, see that. But I would imagine that they've made a decent portion.
Yeah, so now they're saying, well, we've got to sell it on for $40 billion, and then someone's looking going, well, how much have you made in the last 4 years? And really, if you look at a lot of companies, if you had bought a company, the company's kind of worth what you'd get from it in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally as an appraisal. So if I turn over £10 million a year, my company's worth $30 million. You know, that's generally the way it works, isn't it, as a rule of thumb. And there's no way that they've done $10 billion a year on ARM, I don't think.
I have an update to my own story. Sorry about that. NVIDIA is actually acquired.
Oh, it's done.
Over.
It's not done. It's in the final stages. It's in the final stages.
Yeah, they still need to get
the regulatory steps of it to get the final deal done for $40 billion.
I'm playing no games. None.
No.
Take it.
Well, so there's nothing to talk about there, really, is there?
Yeah, I mean, the question for me is, what's NVIDIA's interest in it? Like, what are they planning on doing? Do they just want to own it, or?
Well, NVIDIA actually makes chips, right? And NVIDIA actually develops the hardware itself. So they could be making a play to maybe come up against Qualcomm. They could be making a play to expand their own ability to produce chipsets and increase their own revenue, while also, like I said, grabbing a licensing share or a licensing fee from everybody else that's using the architecture.
So for basically everybody else, because almost everybody else is using it right now.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, it's prolific.
Probably the biggest customer.
It's prolific, but $40 billion is a lot of money. $32 billion is a lot of money to make back.
Look at the prices people are thinking about charging for TikTok, and that honestly could be gone next week.
Yeah, but I think those are always tech bubbles, aren't they? I mean, you look at the valuation of Tesla at the moment is too high. There's been no end of warnings about that. You know, there's a real bubble around Tesla at the moment.
There's a real burst coming sometime in the next little while, and
we've been saying it for years.
Outside of the COVID era, that we're not just thrust into a complete devastation of economy.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've been saying it for a while on this show that Elon's overreached some distance. He's overreached to the point that everyone else is worried, not him anymore. Patrice, your story. You talk about Facebook will stop recommending health groups.
Yeah, so Facebook is in the news again. So very surprised. They've added a new rule intended to slow spread of misinformation, even though I don't think that's going to help. So basically, if a group is removed for violating Facebook's policies, I mean, you have to do a lot to do that, or do the wrong things to do that. Like if you're a right wing group, you're safe. But like if you're showing boobies or whatever, or like women breastfeeding, you're banned. That's basically Facebook's.
When were boobies part of health groups? Because if they were, I should have joined an awful lot more than I asked.
Yeah,
if they were. So, I'd be but a lot
this is
than
a general
I am,
rule. This has, I mean,
my eyesight might be much better, but
yeah, at first glance, nothing to do with health groups. Basically, as I said, if your group violates it, then the members and administrators will not be able to create new groups for a little while, temporarily. If a group doesn't have an admin anymore, it gets archived. I mean, that makes sense. Uh-huh. But the health part is they're not going to include health-related group in its recommendations. So, you know, those recommendations, hey, you should probably join, I don't know, the setup group, for example. There will be no health-related group that is recommended. You have to like actively go out and seek it. I don't understand it. I think there would be other groups that shouldn't be recommended that are recommended. So why health-related? Health-related can be helpful.
Well, health, you've got to, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the EU and Europe and EU and UK about health-related stuff because of the fact of the shit you can peddle effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk an awful lot of bollocks and people will believe you, unfortunately, when it comes to it. You know, the snake oil salesman was the original banned sales peddler of the US. So.
Sure. But on the other hand, it can be really helpful. I mean, especially for, I don't know, people who have rare diseases or are struggling with mental health, for example. It can be really helpful to have those close groups where like people can exchange, just help each other and exchange information. So it is, I mean, they don't stop the groups. The groups still exist. They're just not recommending them anymore, which makes it a little bit harder for people to find them, but not impossible. So, yeah, as I said, I would say why just health groups? I think they should expand that to a lot of other groups.
But you can't touch religious groups because then everyone goes mental, and you can't touch political groups because then it's like, no, that's my right. That's my route to market.
Yeah. Well, they already started trying to, and this is not me defending them at all because Zuckerberg annoys me to no end. they have started to try to reduce the content from militia groups. I think this is maybe more poised against the anti-vaxxers as opposed to just, you know, regular health groups. And this is what always happens in these scenarios, right? You make a move, but unintentionally other groups that are positive are affected. And this is something that, mm-hmm. I mean, part of me is like, at least they're trying to do something as opposed to just sitting there and telling us that, oh, we should regulate ourselves when we clearly see that that does not work. You know, people are so stuck in their confirmation bias that they're never going to regulate the information they see. And so them doing something is better than just sitting on their hands. But at the same time, you know, I think they could, you know, Twitter seems to be on their game so far.
And I'd like to see all these guys do more, but I guess it's better than nothing is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think Facebook is scientific proof of why we can't have nice things.
Yes.
It is almost like a social thought experiment why we can't have nice things as a society.
That's so true.
Yeah, I think they've chosen health simply because it's too complicated. So if they just go, you can't do it, it just saves them an awful lot of work.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they've just shut down on a genre that's complicated to look after. They're just trying to simplify it for themselves.
Not really, because the groups are still there. You can still create a health related group.
Oh, yeah, but it requires less work from them to prove.
Yeah, it's probably going to be less people who can find them, so less people use them. That's true.
They only seem to find each other, though.
I think it's also something that their lawyers are probably saying, listen, the number of people that are getting sick from following these whack job cures that are showing up, like Silver Solution and all this other garbage, are eventually going to come back and bite you in the ass. And they're kind of saying, okay, well, how about if we just stop recommending them? So if people manage or if people go out and suggest them themselves to their friends, that's fine. We can't really do much about that, but we're not going to allow our algorithms to automatically just send this garbage.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's going to stop people from saying things.
They're after an easy life. Did you see they stopped the Snoop Dogg concert about 5 minutes in because someone started smoking dope?
On stage?
Yeah. So it was a live concert, 25% going to charities. And 5 minutes later, Facebook went, nope, stop that. It's like a Monty Python, you know.
You can't get over the
army major coming up. Stop that. It's silly. And then,
exactly.
It was easier for them to do that and refund everyone their tickets than it was to actually have to deal with the fallout of
the antisocial practices of Facebook and what the shit they pull, and then they pull stuff down for a bit of nipple showing on a breastfeeding thing or someone puffing up a weed that could actually just be a cigarette.
Or is perfectly legal where they're doing it. I mean, show me shit that's illegal in my area, but it's legal there, then why do I have why do I even have an opinion about it?
Nanny
I
don't want to
watch it, I go away and stop watching.
Nanny stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that it's not necessarily just the nanny state. I understand the nanny state aspect of it, but it's the whining, bitching, just inanity of the general public that, I saw something that offended me, so I have to yell about it for 15 minutes because, you know what, A, it may make me a little bit more popular and get me more people that are like me to listen to me and listen to my nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been yelled at.
Hey, you don't like it. It's just like a TV channel. You don't like that TV show. Turn it off. Go to another channel. You don't like something you see on the internet. Look somewhere else on the internet. There's lots of stuff everywhere.
But there's stuff that you've got to bear in mind the proliferation of the internet and the actual fact that my 11-year-old daughter spends a lot of time on the internet. You have to, there has to be safe harbor for her that she can go to where she can't see shit that shouldn't be shown to an 11-year-old.
But I get that, but also, that's onus is on the parents. I mean, I had to make sure that I watched and I knew what my kids were watching on TV.
That's a naive.
I didn't let them watch shit that they shouldn't watch.
No, that's a naive statement, mate. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I did that all through. I did that with my kids when I raised my kids. The internet was routed through a server that I checked to see what they were watching or what they were doing. And if I found something that was offensive, I told them they weren't allowed to watch it and I blocked it.
Yeah, but you're not talking about the average person. The average person cannot do what you do with a piece of hardware. The average person relies on honesty of their kids. And the best tool that we've got with our... No, the best tool we've got with our kids is going, right, here's the thing. You're going to go where you want to go, but I'd rather you didn't go here. And if you do want to go there, I'd rather you talk to me about it first. And I don't think that my kids go anywhere that they shouldn't. But when it comes down to it, Ellis can run rings around his mom technology-wise. He can't with me, but he can with her. And that is, Sharon is 90% of the population, unfortunately.
I try to remind people that we live in a society, so everybody's got to do their part. I get so annoyed when I hear, companies like Facebook say, well, personal responsibility, or these conservative folks, personal responsibility. And it's like, you know, or the other thing is, which is we got to run the country like a business. Like a business main job is to turn a profit. So what about all the people that are sick and can't be taken care of, that they're unprofitable? So you want them to, the country just leave them out. So, you know, while I agree, those who can should definitely make sure that you're policing and involved in your kids, what they're watching and stuff like that. But it's not just on them, right? Because there also needs to be recognition that most parents cannot regulate and do those things. So, you know, these companies need to take some responsibility for the communities that they serve.
But Facebook knows how old the person viewing it is.
Sure.
Right? No, they don't.
So
no,
they should.
They have an assumption. There is an assumption, right? They can't, they're not looking directly at you, just going by the, you know, like I can tell you for, like for me personally, I've signed my daughter up for stuff like for her watch. And I had to raise her age. Otherwise she couldn't use it. And I spent $250 for nothing. Other stuff. Yeah, I can put in her legit age and then let the regulations come in. So I get what you're saying, but
and you forget
is that why not have it regulated the same way we regulate movies and things like that? And if you've got a Facebook account, it has to, you know, if you're underage, you have to do it. And then it ends up becoming a problem with the parents not being able to tell if their kids have started up a separate Facebook account that, you know, says they're 25 and they can do whatever the hell they want.
But
some point it can't be the company's responsibility, but at some point it is the company's responsibility. So I can see that if they put restrictions on things based on age, same way we do with all other media that we consume, then I don't understand why they have to then block other things like the Snoop Dogg concert from adults and people that are of age to, you know, be able to rationalize and make rational decisions to be able to see that. Like, why did they have to not have their tickets thrown? Like, that's what I'm saying. There's got to be, and it's not necessarily a super hard thing to do. We're already doing it in several other genres of media.
Like, yeah, I don't know. So they're cut in. And as easy as we would like it to be, you know, I don't know, because other genres of media aren't the internet, and the internet is way more vast than those other mediums.
But there are parental controls you can put on browsers. Just print. You could, I don't understand why you do it.
It's useless. Pardon? I mean, I've had that problem with my daughter. She's 12, and she uses TikTok, and at some point we said, the stuff you're watching in there, we're not very happy with that. And no, she found like 17 different ways around our restrictions.
Mm.
Like at some point, when we had a talk with her, and we tried to be reasonable with her, but if she wants to do it, she will find a way. Just remember back. I don't know how it was for you, but there were restrictions on watching TV for me, for example, when I was younger. I found ways around that. If I wanted to do it, I found a way. Found ways around that.
The late night waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch HBO. Yeah.
Yeah. For example, exactly. It's like, at some point, and I think Chris's point, the internet is way bigger. The amount of content alone that is uploaded to YouTube, and just YouTube, it's not even everything else, is massive, and it is very difficult. People say, oh, YouTube or Google could be doing more. Yes, they could. But at some point, it is simply too much. Like, sure, a really massive company like Google could be doing more, but it's just too much.
But I don't want to be so hard on Facebook on the fact that they're doing something rather than nothing.
The thing is, at least they're doing something.
Yeah. the question is that something because they actually care and they actually want to do something, or is it more so they can say they're doing something and really they don't want to do anything?
Well, yeah, first of all, do you ever think that a company cares about anything anymore or even ever has? They care about a couple of things: their image, their bottom line, and their stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they care about, is and anything that they do has come up to affect one of those three things, one or more of those three things. Mm-hmm. So what's happened is probably their image is looking tarnished, or obviously their image is obviously tarnished, and they're trying to find ways that they can sort of fluff up their image to make it look better, make it look more presentable.
Yeah, but I think if you look at the way that Facebook's image is managed by the higher ups and by Zuckerberg himself, they're more conscious of the fact that we're under enough of a scrutiny and the microscope of Congress at the moment. The last thing we need is any shit over some inappropriate content that we can block dead easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I'm thinking is they took the easiest way to cut off something and say, well, look at, we're failing over here, but look at what we did over here. And we're trying to see how that works. And we'll apply it to more places.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Big Chris, YouTube unveils short form video to rival TikTok. Oh dear.
Yeah, so I don't have a TikTok account, nor do I use it, but I know my daughter watches it and, I know it's popular, and the fact that this crazy Oracle purchase this just occurred, I found this to be interesting because, one, I'm still, even though we were discussing yesterday on the show, is how the heck did Oracle end up purchasing or getting this partnership with TikTok? The one thing I had in the back of my mind is, well, with TikTok being so unstable, who's coming with the next version? And of course, today, boom, YouTube. And it makes sense. It's the perfect fit. So this will be interesting to me, at least, to see, A, if it actually takes off in the first place. Because, you know, these things are finicky. Sometimes they come up with a hit, and then, you know, one of the larger guys try to come up with a version of it, and it just flops. And other times, it takes off. And so this will be interesting to see if they can pull it off and if this, you know, really puts a hurting on TikTok and their new partnership with Oracle.
So they're not lacking the infrastructure to deal with this. I mean, you know, you're talking about 2 billion videos a week being uploaded to YouTube. But the thing I think they've got to watch out for is the branding, because it can't be branded as YouTube. It can't go out in the main YouTube feeds or in the main YouTube app, because all the people like me who sit and watch YouTube videos for information or for entertainment are getting really hacked off with that. So it's got to come out under its own brand label, because otherwise the kids won't buy it, because the kids won't buy it if it's YouTube.
Yeah, so it doesn't look like, it looks like they're doing like half and half. It looks like it's going to have a separate app.
Yeah, got to have a separate app, and it's got to have a separate brand.
But it's going to be called YouTube Shorts. So it's kind of, you know, 50-50 there.
I'm not sure.
That sounds like a clothing brand.
Yeah, YouTube Shorts. Yeah. part of Old Navy.
It's like a partnership.
Yeah, so that's the question. I was wondering if, can they pull this off?
What, can you pull Old Navy Shorts off? Yeah, got like several pairs.
Now I can, not before. I didn't even shop there.
Oh, Old Navy was the only place that ever fits me when I went to the States. It was cheap anyway. Yeah, no, I think there's got to be, my daughter's into TikTok massively. As I said the other week, she walks around like she's got dislocated hips doing dances and stuff up there. And she constantly tried to teach Ellis how to do them, and he's just dismissive of it, but she's obsessed with it because all her mates are into it. It is a massive phenomenon, and that the music industry is really grasped onto it, because they've just said, right, you know what, make a TikTok video, use our song, we don't care. And as a result, they're making a fortune because people are everywhere are hearing the song.
Right.
Great marketing.
Marketing.
Good marketing.
Yeah. And they said they're going to launch with a ton of songs available on the platform already.
Well, that's where they've got the advantage, because they've already got the loop back, haven't they, to the people with it. But a lot of the houses, if you like, music houses, are starting to realise that the less they give a shit about their copyright on TikTok, the more popular the song is.
Yeah, especially since TikTok videos are short anyway, so it's not that you could put like a full song on there.
No.
So.
And it looks like they're taking it seriously. I mean, the app is supposed to have a bunch of tools in there, you know, for slow motion, delay, record, combining multiple clips together, all of that. So at least the only other problem is it's Google. So how long before they cancel it?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's hard to predict whether it will be successful or not. I mean, YouTube is in... like most kids' heads. Like, I mean, my kids watch YouTube basically all day, every day. That's all they do. If it's not TikTok, it's YouTube. Like, my daughter gets up at like sometimes 6:30 in the morning, and the first, like, if it's a weekend, the first thing she does is watch YouTube for like 3 hours until she gets kicked off the TV. Yeah, so it is in people's, in children's especially, but I think in general also in people's minds. So it could work if they made it easy enough, and it honestly probably didn't cost them much because the infrastructure is already there. All they had to do is build like a nice app and throw some marketing on it. So it is possible. The question is, how damaged is the name of, like, the brand name of TikTok with everything going on with China and all of that? Or is it like gone? Like, TikTok is it, and until the next thing comes around. Like, I mean, there have been a couple like this, like Snapchat and Vine and Periscope, and there have been a couple platforms like that that kind of were hyped for a moment and then they fizzled out. So it could be that YouTube is the next thing. It could be this is something else.
Now, do we want to talk about the weird sort of angle of TikTok being bought by Oracle, who is owned by Ellison, who is a heavy Trump supporter?
Yeah. Ellison's a bit off the wall, isn't he?
He really is a bit of a weirdo.
So, Alistair, you really haven't got this, mate. You're supposed to pick one of those.
Yeah, you never get
that. Well, no, I mean, you can pick one or I'll just rattle through them. It's up to you, Otis.
Well, no, but I would say don't ever pick a Daily Mail story because the fight I've just had with the frigging Google ad gave up the will to live, man.
The angry headline of the week was just another security breach, but no one hacked anything. It was just an employee, civil servant has just put 20,000 names online for a while. They were viewed by 5 people over a period of several hours before being taken down. Just one of those things. I doubt any harm was actually done other than the fact the laws were broken as a result of this. But the headline was just like fury as data breach.
It's just a screw up.
No one knew about this or cared. No. I just thought it was quite funny. But otherwise, it is a proper network story.
The UVC light, the UVC light system, you can do that one in 5 seconds if you want, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was the first one, which I said was the daft story of the week. This came through to me as a press release this morning, and I was thinking, what happened to this idea that Trump had about shining UV light around to make everyone better?
On the inside.
It's a lighting company. You mean injecting it?
Injecting UV light.
It's just a UV strip light, but obviously it's a proper one, so they can't just have it hanging there, otherwise it'll make everyone's eyes sting. Basically, it's got an interior fan that sucks the air through it, and as it passes over the light, it becomes clean and nice and pure, and they want everyone to buy those. And there is an alternative one, which has the UV lights on the outside, but you can only use that if there's no one around. So they're like, switch your lights on overnight, and then when you come in the morning, all your air is clean and COVID-free.
But there you go. The important story of the week, as you said, is safety driver at the wheel of a self-driving Uber car.
Absolutely. I think this is an important one, even though it sounds rather dull, because it's been going on for ages.
No, this is massively important.
It was from a couple of years ago when the woman was a test driver in the Uber car and knocked someone down and killed them at 10 o'clock at night.
This was a lady who was walking across the road with a bicycle, wasn't she?
That's the one.
But it was the fact that, you know, if I was driving around during the day, I'd probably want to have a look around. But I tend to automatically try and drive more carefully at night time because you can't see things quite as well. Whereas the video from the CCTV, as it were, in the car seemed to suggest she was fiddling on a phone at the time.
Yeah.
Which doesn't help at all. But this becomes significant because they've decided there's no point suing Uber because it's not their fault. They went through all the right processes to ask permission, apply, pay for the right to be able to test these on real roads. So they did all the right thing. So the courts said, well, it's the woman sitting in the driver's seat that's at fault.
Is it not the problem the problem that you've got in terms of prosecution, though, is that America doesn't have the body corporate like they do in the UK? So in the UK, you'll prosecute the body corporate, whereas you there is no prosecution of the body corporate in America. That's why OSHA is so crap, effectively, at corporate enforcement. It's only enforced at the civil level. So she's got no one to sue at Uber. She will get some money out of Uber, probably, and she will get some money out of the driver, potentially. But in terms of a personal prosecution, there's no one they're going to actually manage to get at the body corporate. So they've gone for the woman that was driving and clearly shouldn't have been playing around on her phone, totally.
Yeah, from what I've read, so I have no great insight on this, is I think they're doing the right thing. Because I think, you know, Uber's not my favorite company at all, but I'm, you know, the brakes were working on that car. In fact, everything on the car, apart from detecting someone jumping out in front of it in the middle of the night, at 10 o'clock at night, you know, it's unfortunate accidents like that do happen, but they're more likely to happen if the person at the driving wheel is actually not actually looking out the window. I think it would be really tough to try and sue Uber on that.
I have a different opinion.
It's not sue, it's prosecute. Just be careful here, because she's being prosecuted entirely different from the suing process. And the key issue is, if this accident had occurred in the UK, there is no question in my mind that Uber would be prosecuted for gross manslaughter, gross negligent manslaughter in the using the Health and Safety at Work Act.
They would do that here, because then it would
succeed. Yeah, so that's my point, is that there is no body corporate prosecution available in the US. It's a harder process for them. So what they've done is gone for the easy, soft target, which is the employee. The employee could be done here, but even the employee's actions would still be roped back towards the body corporate. So it's a cop-out a little bit. They're wrong, though. I think they should be prosecuted, definitely. If they're on the phone screwing around when they should be out conducting a test with a vehicle which is unproven, they're grossly negligent, no question.
I have a different opinion about this. I mean, having seen the video, knowing where that is and having been actually at that intersection, and I think we talked about that at some point in the past on the show, I have a different opinion. I'm not sure this could have been prevented even if she had paid attention. And I mean, it's not even proven that I mean, based on the evidence that I've seen, there is a possibility that she wasn't paying attention. And that is what this trial is about. I mean, there is, like, it has to be proven that she didn't, and then, like, yeah, she should be held accountable. That makes sense. But I'm still not convinced that they could have prevented that, or she could have prevented it, even if she had paid attention, if that's the case.
I think the point here, though, is that it sets a good precedent that even if you're in what's known as a smart car or a self-driving vehicle, in this day and age, you still have to be aware and present in the operation of that motor vehicle, because if you're distracted, you should be charged the same way as if you're distracted driving a normal car.
Yeah, and that's going to be the ultimate thing. When you're behind the wheel, you're responsible. So let's say she wasn't in a self-driving car and it was an accident, it's definitely an accident. And this was an accident. I'm sure she did not set out to hit that poor lady. But, you know, when you're operating a vehicle, you're responsible for it.
Say in the UK, when they made seatbelts compulsory, all traffic started driving faster. And they say it's a recorded fact because people feel safer. So when you get for your self-driving car and self-adjusting car, this is going to get worse. So
there's video footage of people fast asleep.
Even if it is abroad.
No, there's video footage of people fast asleep on freeways. I remember going to a proving ground at Millbrook to do some filming years ago, a corporate day, and there was a guy there got chucked out because he took a Saab onto the banked oval. And when you do 100 miles an hour in the outer oval, the car doesn't go anywhere. It's falling as fast as it's accelerating, effectively. And he put the thing up at 100 miles an hour, put the cruise control on, and climbed into the back seat.
And so this actually, the story that I just posted bridges another thing, too, is that Alberta man was just recently, I think over the last weekend, was charged for sleeping in a self-driving, speeding Tesla. Because when the police pulled up behind the Tesla, he was doing 140K an hour. Jeez. And when they turned on the light, the Tesla sped up. So it went to 150 on its own. And they eventually put on the sirens and the noise and everything else, and eventually woke him up and he pulled over and they charged.
You're right.
Yeah. And that's,
so we also, like, problem. I mean, it just shows a dangerous thing is, what if these smart driving cars start thinking if someone's coming up behind you with their lights on and they think, oh my God, I'm going to get hit because something comes zooming up behind you and they take off.
Yeah.
Which is what
appears to make the safer.
They didn't find Tesla for that. They find the driver. I think that's the right thing to do.
I mean, I have a bit of a problem with, one with Tesla in general, and two with Tesla's self-driving program. If you followed this space like I have, Waymo actually realized that about 15 years ago, that this wasn't going to work. The way Tesla is approaching it in general, where they basically are increasing the self-driving capability, but rolling it out to customers, that would just lead to this, the kind of things we're seeing right now, where people just think they're safe and the car can do everything or whatever, and they just, like, even if you're a responsible driver, you're sitting in the driver's seat, you're trying to pay attention, automatically you're going to drift off. Like, you're going to talk to someone, you're going to, like, whatever, because you think you're safe. With more and more technology, this just happens more. And Waymo actually said, and I think that's where I followed them, they said, okay, this is not going to work. This is just going to lead to accidents. We have to do either full autonomous or we don't. Like, rolling it out to customers,
it sounds like you're arguing we should have fewer safety features because it makes people feel safe. Can we bring back the Ford Pinto? That'd be quite fun.
No, I mean, it depends. But yeah, I mean, there is something to it. Like, all the assistive technologies that we have are also dangerous because they're lulling us into, like,
it's the same reason you have way more accidents within 2 kilometers of your house because you know the area, you feel safer, more people accidentally hit other people, bang into things, lose control of their car or everything because they're like, oh, I'm home. I don't have to think about anything anymore. Yeah. I don't have to. They basically shut off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm kind of torn on that because you make an interesting point and I haven't read it myself, but I know, but Waymo is still developing self-driving technology as far as I remember. But the interesting part of that is I'm not sure how you roll out this new technology then if that's not the case, right? Because even if you think back when they first started coming out with anti-locking brakes, there were still a lot of accidents because people that went to driver's ed and learned that if you're slipping that you pump the brake, whereas anti-lock brakes pump the brake for you. Right. So people were pumping an anti-lock brake and it wasn't getting the effect that they were expecting. People had to learn you don't pump an anti-lock brake, you hold the brake. Right. So, like any new technology that's supposed to help and make things safer, there is that transition period that occurs.
Mm-hmm. There definitely is. We just have to look at what the cost of that technology and how we roll it out. I think it might be an interesting thing to do is that. That self-driving features work, but they only work for a limited amount of time, and then you have to take control back of the car.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah,
right.
It's a smart feature. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, because then
that's exactly the problem.
If Tesla is supposed to detect that your hands aren't on the steering wheel, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's always ways to get
that, right? Sure.
Even with that, you might have your hands on the steering wheel and not pay attention.
So
that's exactly the problem.
Safety fatigue is a well-known thing, and it goes back to the earliest of air crashes. Fatigue is known to be a major cause, and also then safety fatigue, where people get to the point that they are so reliant on technology that they forget core skills. And I've told this story many times on this show about a friend that we went to see who slagged off the Egyptians, and then his wife said, have we got any matches for a barbecue? And I said, you're saying they're stupid as a people at the moment, and they couldn't have built the pyramids, but if she doesn't find the matches, we're going to eat tonight. And it is technology does make you stupid. There's no question of it. But in this story, and this is the important part, the NTSB said there are culpabilities and failings of the safety system, which clearly showed that it did not function as it was designed to do in this incident. But there was a human intervention which was not taken. So they're clearly showing culpability on the part of Uber. And when she sues, when her family sue, she will get a significant payout, or a state will get a significant payout from Uber, probably in the multi-millions. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a prosecution, the only person they're going to actually land in the States is the driver, because the problem is the US law doesn't have enough teeth to go for body corporates, especially large corporations who've got a significant amount of people in their pocket.
Yeah, there'd have to be a tie-in, from what I understand, where, you know, they could show that they hired somebody that was, they knowingly hired somebody that was negligent and, you know, and could have potentially caused the accident. And then they can tie Uber to the act, to this particular accident.
Well, no, the NTSB report clearly shows that Uber systems failed. There is, you know, there's no question that that report will show a civil action against Uber.
For civil, right. But if they wanted to tie them criminally, they'd have to say, okay, you hired a driver that has done this before, right?
The problem that
negligent there.
The problem that you have in the States is that corporate criminal activity is toothless at this level.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yep.
That's the real issue.
And that's the feature, not the bug.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, I think that the big problem is that, especially in the U.S., and I'm not saying that other countries don't have any semblance of these, but the United States has managed to create a system where corporations are really, really, really buffered from basically any kind of responsibility, or very much responsibility. And yeah, you'll see lawsuits that come up with someone pays millions of dollars. But when it comes right down to it, they actually have people that work for corporations that gauge whether the cost of life and the cost of the potential lawsuits is worth the cost of fixing something or adjusting something or doing the right thing whatsoever.
That is going back to the Ford Pinto, where there was an email that said $150 million to retool the line, and we're only going to pay about $40 million in deaths, so let's just pay the death and be done with it.
But there's a whole industry that does that for companies. And that is, when you see something like that come about, then that should be the red flag and the warning flag for the society to say, we're obviously doing shit.
Yes and no. There's a thing in the UK, which is done by the National Audit Office, which is called the Value of Statistical Life, the VOSL. And it's saying, how much is a statistical life worth saving? Mm-hmm. And government use it regularly. It is not worth saving a life when it is a cost of greater than 1.6 million. So 1.6 million for one life is a trade-off. At a statistical level, I'm not saying it's Mrs. Miggins, and I hate Mrs. Miggins, so she can go. but what I'm saying is, you know, when you're in governmental levels of understanding, you're a general effectively in an army, and you're not killing individuals, you're killing an amount of population that has a positive or negative effect on the rest of the population. And that's where we're at with COVID at the moment. You know, there needs to be statistical analysis that shows where we're at with it in terms of other causes of death versus COVID and so on. I don't know how that's being done, but Magic Man's put this as an insurance nightmare. It is and it isn't, but because the vehicle is insured by the owner, and the owner will always take ultimate responsibility. So if the owner is negligent, then the person who's injured has a right of action against the owner's insurance policy. Simple as.
Now, the interesting thing is, if it was a test vehicle, is the vehicle still owned by Uber, or was it owned by that person? Was that person
an employee of Uber?
Or was it just a person that said, I'll sign up to be on this vehicle?
That was a corporate. That's the problem. Is it's a corporate event with the person as an employee acting on behalf of the corporation. So it'll be a corporate insurance.
The corporate insurance would be the one that had the
that's
insurance.
That's civil.
On that car.
That's not the prosecution. They could
chase after the governor of Arizona as well, couldn't they?
Be nice
for
one
granting
to see.
The license in the US, first place to something that we knew would cause an accident.
In the US, definitely that's possible.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by TSO Host. At the moment, they've got a massive sale on their servers. You can get VPS, you can get dedicated servers, you can get loads of stuff from them. And you'll get it cheaper than using our offer code, which is BTN20. But anything else that you get from them for hosting, BTN20 will get you 20% off your basket. Several people did it last week on the socials. Thank you ever so much to those people that did. But you got to get out on the socials and give TSO Host the brand recognition for looking after this network. We do not have the funds to pick up the servers that they have for us. We've got two massive servers that do a huge amount of work. So please, 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 can you make sure you get out on the socials and say thanks to TSO Host for supporting @tech. Without them, we go under. And also, I'm in Max. Anything with a Mac, an Apple logo on it can be repaired. Going right back to the first iPads, or iPods, going back to your Apple Hi-Fi system. If you've got a G4 iMac, you've got Sunflower iMac, you've got the G3 Bondi Blue, like I have out in my little collection, any of those things, they can repair it. If you've also got some old tech that you want rid of, you can send it to them and they'll appraise it for you, and they might give you some money for donor parts and stuff like that as well as. And they do data recovery too. They're absolutely brilliant. Make sure if you've got anything with an Apple logo, go along and get them to give you a free quote on how it'll be repaired. And all of their repairs come with a 6-month warranty as well as. Story today of a lad who dropped some coke inside his MacBook, and he took it along to Apple and he got charged £840 for a brand new logic board on it. But fortunately took it to IMN Max and they replaced a few components on the logic board that had fried out, and it cost them just over £400. So halved the price of an Apple repair.
Nice.
And also if you've got legacy machines that Apple won't even touch, then IMN Max will. Check them out at imnmax.com. And of course, Callum will be here tomorrow for the Max show as 4 p.m. Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Mr. Ashley.
So I mentioned earlier that I've been doing a lot more woodworking. Well, a lot more.
Yeah.
Woodworking. And I've been building some pretty cool stuff. And one of the things that comes with the woodworking part of, aspect is the cleanup. And, you know, a lot of sawdust gets created. And what I've been talking about yesterday, and I'm going to bring to these you folks as well, is, of course, you have a brand name shop vac, but, you know, a vacuum cleaner that you can attach to. You can attach to a lot of the power tools today. And the problem is the vacuum cleaner is way over there and you usually run the hose way over here too. Yeah. And you got to walk over, turn it on. So then you're like, do I leave it on? You leave the vacuum running for 2 hours while you're working. Pain. So what I got was a remote switch, power on switch. And it's really cool. It's only $10. I got mine from Home Depot, which is our hardware store out here, but they're all over Amazon. They're usually in the same range between $10 to $14. You know, many people will use them for Christmas lights, but I use it for my vacuum. And so all I do is I keep the keychain in my pocket. When I'm about to cut a piece of material, I just tap the button on. It turns on the outlet, which then and I leave the vacuum on. Vacuum turns on. All the sawdust goes into the vacuum. Coolest setup for $10 ever. It's one of my favorite things that I've done with this whole woodworking thing. So the model that I got is made by a company called Defiant. It's the Defiant Wireless Indoor Outdoor Remote Control. But if you can't find that, or if you don't have a Home Depot, just check out any of the ones that are on Amazon.
Excellent, mate. Good tip. Like that one. Patrice, are you struggling or do you want me to come back to you?
Come back to me. I just need to find the link first.
Atlee, your turn, mate. Let's see if you can get the cool thing time. Once and for all.
You have to give me a second.
Okay. Alistair, just come around a bit quick.
Okay. Well, good job. I'll put that in then.
Good job. You're ready, mate. Yeah, well done.
It's just a reminder that we are now 100 days away from Christmas. So you're probably thinking, what can I get the kids? And, you know, I put aside £35,000 plus VAT for their present. I'll buy them a toy car they can ride around in.
Oh, mate.
So there you go. If you follow the link, it's the little car company is made an Aston Martin DB5 for kids.
Powered by... Is it a battery type thing? You know, 2 miles an hour thing.
It's electric. Yeah, it's an electric car, but still, it's a toy car.
At $35,000.
It starts at $35,000 if you go for the cheap model, which you don't want to be seen with the cheap model. I would go for the $45,000 DB5 Vantage Junior plus VAT again. They're also built to order, so what you see here is probably. It could well be 3D images rather than the real thing.
So you could get one with an ejector seat.
You have to order them.
You could get one with an ejector seat then.
I don't know how much that would cost you. You could always ask. I reckon the people on the phone probably go, ha, 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 Oh, what a good idea. I've not heard that before, sir.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. All right, mate. I was only trying to have some fun. Sorry.
Is that enough time?
Yeah, no, that's great. Patrice, you got no choice now. Come on.
No, I got it. Hey! I already put it in the chat. So it's a book. It's called Moscow Rules. And it is by Antonia and Joanna. No, Antonio and Joanna, I think. Antonio and Joanna Mendes. Both of them were at some point in their life CIA operatives in Moscow. They were all known, like if you're on YouTube, that's where, how I found them. They do a lot of videos nowadays and they like help a lot of movies with their like spycraft stuff and so on. They're really, really good storytellers as well. I think that helps. But it's about something that, at least according to them, really existed in like the 70s and 80s, especially the Moscow rules, like how they basically try to outsmart the most, like really the best, what they said, the best like spy service or whatever you want to call it in the world, which was the KGB at that point. They were really, 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 really good. And they still had to find ways to do their thing and do their job and eventually did. But it's a fascinating story. I listened to the audiobook because I really enjoyed doing that. But it's also available as a Kindle or hardcover version or even a paperback. As I said, it's a great story. If you're into anything spy related, I mean, just good stories as well. I don't know how much of it is true, but they say it is at least as far as they can go, like talking about things that like are not still top secret to say.
Yeah, no. I've got to say, I love Damian Lewis's spy stuff that's on Netflix at the moment. That's really, really
good. Yeah, that's good.
Really
too.
Enjoy his stuff. Superb. Good pick, mate. Alice, Atlee, even. What have you got for us, mate?
Well, I've been watching this thing, and it hasn't come out yet, but I'm looking forward to it when it does come out. It's the new Surface Pro X.
You really haven't got what the cool thing's about, have you? In all the time you've been coming on here, you've never really grasped what the cool thing's about.
Okay, fine. Sure.
No, don't go in a huff.
No, that's fine. So what is it that I'm missing?
The idea of the cool thing is it's something that you've had or you've got or you've bought in the last week that you thought, you know what, that was really cool. It can be an online service. It can be an app. It can be a movie that you've watched. It can be anything on Netflix. You can do anything you like that's tech related.
Okay, fair enough.
But the idea is it's something that you go, wow, this has made a difference to my life.
Yeah, or something that you would like to buy but can't afford.
Okay, fair enough. Well,
yeah. Okay. I'd rather people had experiences of it. That's all.
Yeah, that's
right. Don't be upset at me, Atlee.
No, it's fine.
He is. He's upset.
Just 1 second.
He's actually upset. He's upset at me.
No, not at all.
My cool thing.
Is it fold in half?
My cool thing is Spark. I've been using Mail App, and the reason I moved. Do you remember Sparrow? So Sparrow email, yeah. I absolutely adored. I trusted everything to that. I put everything in it. It was absolutely fantastic. And then Google bought it and killed it. And I was like, I'm never going to get myself in that situation again. So I went back to Mail App and I just started using Mail App. And I hate Mail App. It is disgusting as an application. Its interface with contacts is shite. And with the diary, it's crap. It's better. It's better than it was, but it's still pretty poor. I really hated it. But I've got a new corporate email address for my company. And I just thought, you know, this is silly. And then Andy Vaughan, who's in the company with me, said, why don't you try Spark? So I've downloaded Spark and I've just used it for the corporate stuff. It's so much more intuitive. Oh, my God, it's so much better. And the thing was, and this is, you got to hear me out, I only stayed away from it because I didn't want to get invested in it to the point that then Google bought it and killed it. So you get me logic there, right? Yeah, or someone bought it and killed it. So. My cool thing is Spark, and I'm a bit late to the party. I fully accept the criticism, but I hope you understand why.
Okay. I absolutely second that. I've been on the Spark beta for, I don't know, 5 years probably at this point. I'm in frequent contact with the company. Really good app. I use it with, I don't know, 10 different email addresses or something. It's literally the only app I've tested them all.
Well, please tell them. Please tell them that not to sell it to anyone that will kill it, because if they do, I'll find a contract on them, and because it'll break my heart, and I couldn't cope with that.
I'll, I'll tell them, yeah.
Pass that on.
No, it is a great app.
Point them to this episode of the show and say, that's how much this guy loves your app. Don't kill it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I've got
I tried it. I didn't find it very good at all.
It's when you've got it next to Mail App, mate, it's stellar. Next to Outlook, maybe not so good.
I've not used Mail App since it was first launched.
That's wise. That's very wise. That's I wish I'd done that. Right.
I found Spark was strange. It just didn't find all my messages. I could use other devices. All my messages would be there, but on Spark, it would just still not find them. I never understood why, and neither could support. So I just gave up on them in the end.
Right. Right.
How is Spark with multiple accounts?
Yeah, good. They're on the left-hand side. And awesome. You pull them down. Yeah. Dead easy.
The best feature of Spark is the smart inbox, where it combines all your accounts into one view, but then groups them by type of email. So you get all the newsletters, all the all your personal important email or newsletters and so on in groups. And you can disable it if you don't want to, but like that makes it really, really easy to manage everything for me.
I find Mail App is crap at chains of emails. Someone replies in the middle of something. You're like, what? You lose their reply, whereas you don't get that with Spark. Good.
Yeah.
Stroppy Atley is going to take us through his cool thing, and it's good, mate.
Yeah. So this is a game I've been playing since it came out in 2015, I think. And it's available on all the platforms. It's available on Xbox, on PlayStation, on PC. And it's Neverwinter. It's basically the official Dungeons & Dragons, electronic version of Dungeons & Dragons. And it is awesome. So think, if you've ever played, what is that? Can't remember the name of it now. Anyways, there's another really popular game, but it's insane. And the latest update they just put out for it is fantastic. I was having so much fun. I think I spent 30 hours straight playing.
Whew.
It's really good. It's a great game, and the community's huge. I think when I was last on, I think there were, 300,000 people playing the level I was playing. Like, it's huge. It's a massive amount of people playing it all over the world. It's an insane game. It's one of those games you can grind through and you can earn things, or you can go in and pay some money and buy some things. But I played it for probably 4 years before I spent a dime on it.
Excellent. Now you spent so much money you can't finish your office.
No, not at all.
All right. Okay.
Not at all. But it's a lot of fun. It's a great game. There's a great community around it. You can find basically I have little sub-communities called clans or guilds rather. And you can join a guild and find all sorts of people that will help you level your characters up and help you come up with the best builds and do different things. There's all sorts of things from dungeons to try to play versus player gameplay plus quests and different things to go through. It's a really great game, and you can spend as much or as much time as you want playing it.
Thanks, man. Good pick. Well done. Love the fact you grasped the cool thing, man.
You're welcome.
Oh, aye. Apparently I'm welcome.
You're welcome. I had the electronics in your house answer for me. Thanks.
I didn't even know I'd asked her anything, but cool. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Ashley?
You can always find me hanging out with my two homies on the SMR podcast. We record every week. We mostly talk about tech, but every once in a while you might get a conversation about woodworking, barbecue, who does the best toenails, whatever comes to mind.
Oh, cool.
We make it happen. And you can catch me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley.
My goal is to get on that podcast.
Oh my God. Just make it happen. I didn't.
To talk about toenails?
Well, no, because the last time I asked you, it was like, no, it's just the three of us and you can bugger off, mate. You're not interested.
Yeah. I've never said those words.
Well, okay, but that's how it felt.
Never. We're going to make it happen.
Do it, man. I want to come on. Patrice, where can we get hold of you?
Every week here on the Mac Show and the Big Show, so Mac Show tomorrow. Everything I do on thepatrice.com, and my podcast is the Foodie Flashback. And I'm actually going to record one on the weekend with Chris. So
I was just about to say, tell me you're doing a barbecue one with Chris.
Absolutely, we are.
I want rub recipes, dude. Don't be on there going, oh, no, it's my mama's secret recipe. I'm not saying a word. Not going to cut it, man.
All right, I'm going to give you, I will discuss my secret for rubs. How about that?
Dude.
I will bring that up.
I'm totally listening to that one. That would be great.
And then you're going to be like, really? You're going to be so disappointed. But then you're going to peep the logic. You're going to peep the logic, and then you're going to follow my suggestion. There, I'm gonna say, the tease.
No one can survive on that much sugar and syrup.
And I just wanted to say the latest episode is actually with Adam, so Matt Cast.
Oh, nice. What food does he
really
eat?
Really interesting.
Does he eat?
He does actually eat, yeah. And it's surprising. Like, I wouldn't have thought, like, what we talked about. So.
Oh, that's a tease. That's a tease. That's called a tease, mate. Yeah. Well done. I like that. Yeah, good lad. Yeah, I like that. Atlee, where are you?
You can reach me here, and you can reach me at Atlee Hunter on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter and Instagram, and you can reach me at atleehunter.com.
And, of course, host of The Pocket Show and The Microsoft Show.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that getting a bit tired now?
No, it's fine.
Mr. Tabs, where would you be?
Yeah, I have my weekly chronicle on Substack called Autosave is for Wimps. So if you'd like to go there, it's delivered as an email, or you can just go to the website, but you probably won't remember. So it's best to sign up for the email. No advertising, no other sales, GDPR compliant, every Friday lunchtime.
Really? Yeah. Excellent.
Really good content.
Mm. And if you want to know where that link is, then it's in our chat room. So go to britishtentnetwork.com/chat, navigate to the 17th of September, and go down to 8:25 p.m. and you will see Alistair, along with all the other stories that we talked about and all the cool things as well as. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech on Twitter as well. Carl Swagger does the Daily Show every day, 5 minutes of your favorite tech news in your inbox at 9 o'clock in the morning. We do need support for that. Carl gets paid by the network to do that. We pay him a couple of $100s a month. The funds are slowly dwindling. So please, if anyone can sponsor us, $20, $10 or $5 a month, then that would be fantastic. Please, thank you ever so much. We'll be back again next week. Big Show is live at 7 p.m. If you are not going to come because you're having your dinner, eat earlier. Yeah, Bob Beecham. Have a great weekend. See you in Max Show tomorrow. Thanks for listening.